This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Take your Apple to work day with help from, of all companies, IBM.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. Two companies that famously used to get on each other's nerves are joining forces. IBM and Apple are teaming up to get iThings deeper into the corporate world. Apple gets IBM's expertise in the business market, and IBM gets a chance to develop special apps for Apple, Marketplace's Nancy Marshall Genzer reports.
There's a famous picture of Steve Jobs flipping the bird at an IBM sign. Then there was this Apple commercial depicting IBM as Big Brother from the book 1984.
On January 24th, Apple Computer will introduce Macintosh. And you'll see why 1984 won't be like 1984.
But that was when IBM and Apple competed for the desktop computer market. Now, Apple needs IBM's expertise as it tries to get companies to order more iPhones and iPads. IBM will develop more than 100 business apps for Apple. Forrester analyst Frank Gillette says the IBM partnership answers security concerns and gives CEOs one more reason to buy Apple.
It's not just, hey, the employees prefer it, but it also means, hey, you know, the business advantages might even be stronger if I go with the Apple solution.
IBM gets to be part of a winning team, and IBM's app designers will have greater access to Apple software. I'm Nancy Marshall Genzer for Marketplace.
Bank of America reported this morning that profits fell 43% last quarter, with its mortgage business down and its costs of fending off lawsuits and fines going up. Profits work out to 19 cents a share this time around, well below expectations. A year earlier, it was 32 cents a share. Bank of America's stock is down 1% in pre-market trading at the moment. Sally Herships reports on what banks are coping with this profit reporting season.
Citibank just agreed to a $7 billion settlement with the Justice Department. So how are the big banks doing with their earnings? Paul Miller is managing director of FBR Capital Markets.
You saw J.P. Morgan blow numbers away. Citi beat numbers. Wells Fargo didn't beat numbers, but still put up some decent numbers.
Then there's Bank of America, which Miller estimates could end up shelling out over $10 billion for its role in the financial crisis. Jim Sinegold is an equity analyst with Morningstar.
As the most troubled bank, Bank of America will have to pay an enormous amount to the Department of Justice.
Sinegold says we've seen legal expenses going up at all the banks. He says J.P. Morgan just paid $500 million in legal fees.
That really eats into your earnings power, and I don't think that's something that's going to go away anytime soon.
So Sinegold says at the same time, banks have been trying to cut costs with strategies like layoffs. But he says as long as the stock market keeps doing well, banks can manage more money and charge more fees. In New York, I'm Sally Herships for Marketplace.
Is it possible Time Warner is in play today? There are published reports that Rupert Murdoch, the tycoon behind 21st Century Fox, will keep trying to buy Time Warner after an $80 billion buyout offer was rejected. That according to the New York Times. Time Warner stock is currently up 19% in pre-market trading. Political candidates' email is extremely important. Campaigns spend a lot of time trying to figure out how to make those emails actually work. They want us to vote, but they also want us to give early and often. Marketplace's David Gura has more on the quasi-science of this.
When Barack Obama first ran for president, Steve Geer was his email director.
It's a fun job.
It's also an important job. In 2012, President Obama's reelection campaign raised more than $350 million through email.
You know, you have a subject line that catches your attention. You have an introductory sentence that hooks you and brings you into the narrative, and then you get as quickly as you can to the ask.
Because our inboxes are so full, Gear says, a catchy subject line is key.
If no one opens your email, it doesn't matter how good your argument is.
Obama for America used subject lines that were casual. Meet me for dinner, one said. It looked like the president had sent the message himself.
Increasingly, people are doing things that will just simply catch the eye.
That's Patrick Ruffini, a consultant who oversaw digital strategy for the Republican National Committee. Campaigns are using animated GIFs and countdown clocks. Ruffini says the novelty factor is important, but it's also important to have a message and to keep it short.
You need to essentially get them off that email as quickly as possible.
What someone like Ruffini really wants is for you to click a link and to donate. An email director looks at how much you've given and when you've given.
The amount of testing that is now going into emails to keep people opening, to keep people clicking, I mean, it's amazing.
Email, compared to direct mail or TV ads, is cheap, and the return on what's a relatively small investment is huge. Eitan Hirsch is a professor of political science at Yale.
Having lots of people giving $5 generates this very powerful list that campaigns can use now and in the future.
A digital strategist like Steve Geer lives in fear of donors unsubscribing.
Good copy, good creative will always get attention, but there's a difference between short-term attention and long-term engagement.
A campaign wants you to give not once, but over and over again. In Washington, I'm David Gura for Marketplace.
And an inspiring farewell performance for Yankee Derek Jeter at the All-Star Game last night, but then somebody goofed at CBS, tweeting, quote, Michael Jeter takes bow. Social media was agog. The prevailing theory, a Freudian slip, conflating Michael Jordan with Derek. Better theory, they were thinking Michael Jeter, the late Emmy and Tony Award-winning actor, comedian, and voiceover guy who was in The Fisher King, The Green Mile, and Air Bud. Michael Jeter had a trademark woebegone look. Derek is the one who is extraordinarily handsome, both talented in their own fields. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.